It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And we are rapidly approaching the end of the season, which means, for some people, it means we're talking playoffs. For some, it means very tight races. And for some, it means looking ahead to 2017. So we'll be doing a little of all of that this week. We will start with a guy who has just amazed me and amazed everybody. That's not just a me, but Trey Turner is, I think we all knew he could hit for average. I think we all knew he could score some runs. I think we all knew he could steal some bases. I'm not sure anybody saw 340 coming. I'm quite sure that we didn't, in this kind of short time span, see the RBI, the home runs. You take 255 plate appearances, roughly multiply that by 2.5. And you're talking 20 homers, 75 RBI, 100 runs, and 60 stolen bases. I am not sure I'm willing to buy into that being a full season projection. I think that's pretty generous. But how high do you have Turner as a 2017 prospect at, well, and that's part of the question, second base, shortstop, outfield, wherever he may end up?
I think, I mean, it's so early in rankings for next season, but I think he has to be viewed as top five, and I wouldn't really argue with someone. I think he's already, say, well, let's talk about him as a second baseman. I mean, would I rather have him or Robinson Cano? I mean, next season, I mean, Cano's going to be 1 year older. Cano will probably hit an extra 10 to 15 home runs, but, I mean, Turner will probably steal... I think he'll steal 40 or 45 bases next season, and that's, he's in a perfect situation there with the Nats and Dusty Baker to steal bases. So he'll steal 40 more bases than Cano. He'll score probably more runs than Cano hitting atop that lineup. And I think his batting average is a little high right now. His BABIP's 393, but even if, he's a fast player. He could hold a 350 BABIP or something like that and maybe hit close to 300, and that puts him right with Cano. So I could see a case for him being as high as Cano, and I think Cano is probably a second or early third-round pick next year.
When you talk about top prospects who have come in and really shown something this year, the overall numbers on Alex Bregman are not nearly as good. But if you take out that really rough stretch he had at the start, at one point he was hitting .031, and you just go since then, he's hitting .305, slugging .567, 8 homers and 178 plate appearances. I realize it's not a direct apples to apples, but if you're looking at these two guys, who do you like more for next year?
I like Turner a lot more, and it actually has nothing to do with them at the plate. I could see Bregman having a similar batting average, similar, you know, totals in everything except steals. It's just that there are so few base stealers right now, you know, that if a fantasy owner can get someone who has the same similar numbers in all the other categories and then has 40 steals, like, that's just a huge leap. We're seeing homers, you know, on the rise this season, and many more players producing sizable home run totals, and that's not really happening with steals.
The other thing that intrigues me about Turner, and I hinted at this a little bit, is we really don't know where he's going to play, and we do know that he's going to play, and that is potentially valuable. I mean, the higher you get, the less you're going to worry about something like positional flexibility. But if you're really making some fine decisions, the fact that it's entirely conceivable, well, and he will clearly have outfield eligibility, and it wouldn't be shocking. The guy's played shortstop. It wouldn't be shocking if he got some reps at shortstop as well. I tend to value that a little more than you do, but does that give Turner a bump for you in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, those things do factor in, especially if you're in a shallower league where there are more options on waivers, you know, and you can pick and choose a little more. Like, having someone you can move around, I think, in those formats is really valuable.
And then we talked Bregman. We now talked a guy who we thought was going to compete for playing time with him, and they're both playing, and that's Yulieski Gurriel. He was a big unknown. I mean, I know there was a lot of excitement, a lot of people rushed to jump on him just because that kind of talent doesn't often appear as an option late in seasons. But it was a real question as to what he was going to be for a variety of reasons. Right now, he is raking. He is really looking good in this Astro lineup. How high are you on him? Is he a must-start across the board right now?
I think pretty close. You know, I mean, in September, it's hard to say a lot of players are must-start just because owners have really individual needs at this time of year. But I think he's someone who's probably playing better than his fantasy numbers indicate. I mean, he has played in 21 games. He has 9 RBIs and 9 runs, which doesn't really jump out at you. But he's hitting .338. He's hit 3 homers and 71 at-bats. So, you know, he's done his part. I mean, easily he could have had, you know, a few more runners on base for some of those hits and have 14 RBIs, and then I think he would be attracting a lot more attention. You know, I mean, the good news for Astros fans and looking at that lineup next year is it looks like Gurriel and Bregman are both going to be, you know, plus contributors for them. And then when you add that into what they already have with Altuve and Springer and Correa, you know, now you start to see a lineup that's a little long. I've always viewed that Astros lineup as really top-heavy, and when I watch them play, I feel like at the bottom of the lineup, a lot of high strikeout guys, you know, a lot of low batting average guys, maybe they're ready to turn the corner with that lineup now.
Sticking with this theme of 2016 arrivals, I think we're both a little cool on Dansby Swanson in the short term. Again, you know, we both like him in the long term. I certainly think he's going to be a very good player, but he's done some nice things so far, starting with the fact that he's hitting .300. He's had a pretty nice strike zone. He's only stolen one base, and I think there's some hope. I don't think anybody sees him as a 30 or 40 steal guy, but I think there's some hope that, you know, over a full season, he's maybe a 15, 20 steal guy. But he's been pretty good. I mean, look, he's owned in all NL-only leagues. He's owned in all your deeper leagues. But I suspect he's still sitting out there in some mixed leagues. Is this a guy that should be owned everywhere?
I wouldn't say necessarily everywhere, just because we haven't seen a lot of power or speed from him. I agree with you. I think there's room for growth with the stolen bases. I'm just not sure if that'll happen in the last couple of weeks of the season. I mean, I'm much higher on him than I was when he was promoted, and I was pretty low on him. The two things for me that have changed in that time, you know, he's shown that he's not overwhelmed in the majors, and I felt like that was a very real possibility, that he would get called up, bat 150, and just show that he wasn't ready, and he's at least shown through his, even just through his strikeout to walk ratio, that like that's not a concern with him. And then the Braves lineup seems to have turned a corner a bit. It was the worst lineup in baseball, you know, across, you know, the first 4 months of the season. I think they're in the top 5 in runs scored since the beginning of August, and I think we mentioned that last week. So when he first came up, I was like, oh, there's a lot of risk here, and he's going to hit low in a weak lineup. You know, two big things have changed, and now he's kind of intriguing.
Andrew Benintendi back with the Red Sox, and a little quicker than some people expected. Our depth chart lists him as the starter. He will probably play a good bit, but do you adjust your expectations for him over the final 3 weeks relative to what we were seeing from him before he got hurt?
I think so. I feel like, how many games, Matthew, do you think he starts a week? Say in a 6-game week, I'm going to guess 4. Do you think that's,
I think
even,
that's a good number?
Yeah, and I mean, 4 starts a week, I know it's a good lineup, but 4 starts a week hitting somewhere around 7th or so, it doesn't get you in a 10-team league, you know, active lineup, and it may not get you in a 12-team league active lineup. So, you know, I still like Benintendi long-term, and I do believe that Boston will feel like they're probably postseason bound. They'll want to get him up to speed in these last couple weeks. So he will play fairly regularly, but I could see Brock Holt and Chris Young each kind of stealing a start a week from him.
I mean, a big part of the problem for Benintendi right now is that the Red Sox are not going to be in any hurry to get Chris Young out of the lineup. He's absolutely raking, and that presents a little bit of a problem because I don't think they're going to do much with center field and right field. So it's basically left or no start, and Chris Young is a guy that's, I can't imagine he starts, can't imagine Chris Young sits against any lefty between now and either the end of the year or when he cools off drastically. So that kind of bites into what Benintendi has in front of him.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's the concern with Benintendi that, you know, he wasn't out for a really long time. He was out for a little while and didn't have the benefit of, you know, a typical rehab assignment he could get earlier in the season. So, you know, if he came back and just wasn't totally, you know, 100% of himself, that wouldn't be surprising either. I think in a 15-team league, you put him back in the lineup. In a 12-team league, it probably depends, you know, on your options. I might for the next few days just start Chris Young over him and see if the Red Sox even play Young against some right-handers, because Young is that streaky hitter who tends to go really hot and cold.
Yeah, I would certainly look at the matchups, you know, if they've got Gausman, for example. I probably wouldn't start him against Gausman if they get him in that series next week. But, yeah, I think it's if you know, that's one of those where it, I think a big factor is, are we talking day-to-day or week-to-week? Because I think it would be tough to start Chris Young for a week, but I would certainly be interested in daily matchups.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Speaking of right-handed hitters with power, though that's about the only thing these two guys have in common, Giancarlo Stanton apparently is going to start tomorrow. Not a given until we see the lineup, but after Wednesday's game, the Marlins said that their expectation is that Stanton will start Friday. We still don't know whether that's going to be every other day. We don't know whether the idea is to plug him in and play him nearly every day, whether it's four times a week, what the plan is. So I guess to some extent you wait till the last possible moment, see what they do over the weekend. But is your expectation that Stanton would be a guy that you would have in your lineup for a weekly transaction for next week?
I don't think you have to put him in your lineup. I mean, you know, since he came back, he has one hit. I mean, he hasn't been up to bat that often, but he has one hit since he came back from the injury. So there's a very real possibility that even if he starts, I don't know, I can't see him starting every game next week, and I think there's a possibility if he starts four games that he ends the week with two or three hits. He could end up the week two or three home runs. Like, now I'm back to saying, I think in a 15-team league, I'd probably roll the dice and go with him. And especially if I could use home runs, but I don't know if I would use him in a shallow league. Like, do you feel like he has to go back in the lineup?
Again, I think your point is the key. It depends on what you need. If I could even potentially benefit some from the power, I think he falls in the category of guys where I'd feel really dumb outthinking myself if he ran into four home runs next week. You know, if I didn't need that, if my home run position were set, I'd be a little easier to sit him. But and that kind of leads into something else I wanted to ask you about. And I think it's something that it's a question a lot of people are answering right now and kind of wrestling with, which is, how do you kind of tilt at this time of year with your own lineup? We've talked about trade strategy and waiver wire strategy, but within your lineup, how do you personally, as somebody who does this very seriously, balance specific needs, I need steals, this guy can get me steals, with just kind of not wanting to outthink yourself and making sure your best players are in there? Because I feel like those kind of one-category guys or even two-category guys, boy, if they don't get it, then you feel really dumb that you didn't have the other guy helping you out. I kind of just wonder, as you set your lineups at this time of year, how do you make those assessments?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a roto based decision. You know, in points league, they don't have that as much. But in a roto league, I think, you know, there's not really a mathematical formula for this one, but you almost have to filter out some categories. Like, if you are not close to any teams in home runs, then Stanton just isn't really valuable for you. And that's just, you know, insane to say back in April when he was a first-round pick, and maybe he was your first-round pick. But, you know, pulling Stanton, for example, in one 15-team league, I've been using Terrence Gore from the Royals for the past 2 weeks, and he has a couple steals, and I'm hoping he'll get maybe one or two more this week, because steals in that league are vitally important to me. I need to catch a couple owners in steals. One of the other owners is an owner that is competing for first place. So that, I mean, roto owners also have to look where they can get those two-point swings, where they need to protect or to catch someone who they're competing with to win their league. And, like, to think that Terrence Gore, who will probably get zeros, and maybe he'll score a run or two in September, but he'll probably get zeros in every other category, to think that he could be more valuable to me than Stanton is hard to believe, but the truth is he is, because I'm ahead of everyone else in that league in home runs by enough of a margin that Stanton's not really going to help me. Like, owners really have to filter out some of those statistics, and I think it's okay to play with a couple spots in your lineup at the end of September. Keep your studs in, like those guys, the Joey Vottos and the David Ortiz, like the guys who have just been awesome all season. But I think you got to play with some roster spots, because I know what you mean about if you missed out on a great week from Stanton, it would upset you. But at the same time, I also feel like if I looked at all my standings and made an educated decision, okay, I need steals, and I didn't go out and make aggressive moves for it, and then I never caught the guy, you know, I think I'd look back and say, well, I would kick myself. I'd say, well, I did all this research, and then I didn't go for it. I feel like you got to go for it in some categories.
I think that's perfectly reasonable, and that is why I asked. We move on to starting pitchers. And, you know, a topic that we have bounced back and forth a lot, and I think you in general are a little more willing to run the risk with Rockies pitchers than I am. Chad Bettis is a guy who some really nice lines lately. You go back last three starts, 18 strikeouts, two walks, 23 innings pitched, which is pretty compelling. Now, two of those were on the road. Is he a guy who's on your radar at all? I know you like him more than I do because you put him on the notes. but how much interest do you have in him if you get a friendly matchup or two here down the stretch?
Yeah, I actually don't have much, and I almost put him on the notes for maybe a little bit of another late season big picture point, which is, if it was May and Chad Bettis had a couple really good starts, I wouldn't be that interested. I would say, forget it. This is going to even out. He's going to have some bad starts. But when we get to the middle of September, all you need to have Chad Bettis help you is for him to have even two more really good starts. It would mean a lot to certain owners in certain situations. I'm not really interested in him. There are probably other guys of the same type where they're on waivers in all leagues and have had a couple nice starts that I would pick over him. But there are a lot of scenarios for owners right now where it makes sense to grab guys like Bettis, guys who have had a two or three, maybe four good starts in a row, and if they can just squeeze a couple of good starts out of them, then that could improve the ratios, because it is kind of it's the take a chance time of year. If you're trying to catch people in ERA and WHIP, you need innings to catch them. You can't just sit on your hands necessarily and catch them, so you kind of need to roll the dice on some of these pitchers. I don't think Bettis is mine, and I can tell he's definitely not yours, but I do think you have to scour your waiver wire and find someone you kind of believe in.
Would Ubaldo Jimenez be one of those guys? And he's interesting for a couple of reasons, one of which is he's pitched pretty well lately, but the other is that the Orioles have a stretch coming up that might not be too daunting. I don't know exactly how his starts will break down, but it is distinctly possible that he could have home starts against both the Rays and the D-backs over the next week and a half. That makes him a little more appealing than if he were only going to be Blue Jays, Red Sox, maybe going to Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. And it looks like his next start, I think, is going to be at home against the Rays. And that's one, he threw a complete game against them, really recently. I think you have to consider that. I like him more than Bettis, just in the sense of, Jimenez is, he's maybe almost like the Chris Young of pitchers, not the Chris Young hitter of pitchers,
yes.
Like the way we just discussed on the Red Sox, because I get there's a Chris Young of pitchers. But, Chris Young is someone who can be really valuable or just really hurt you in stretches, and Jimenez kind of the same and tends to hurt you more than he helps. But he's pitching well. I would try him for that home start against the Rays. Now, it looks like after that, unless, rotations shuffle this time of the year, but he may be home Red Sox at Blue Jays for his two starts after that, and then may even squeeze one at the Yankees at the very end of the season. I wouldn't use him against Boston. I'm 50-50 on Toronto right now. They're really struggling to hit right now, and they strike out a lot. So I wouldn't say he's a definite no in that matchup if he's still pitching well when we get to that point.
It's a lot tougher for me to start somebody against them at their place. I know they did scuffle it at home recently, but it is tougher for me to say, they've been struggling for a start in Toronto than on the road, even though Baltimore is also a really good place to hit. There's just something about that team and that park, and no, I'm not even hinting about the man in white. It's just, that's a tough one. That's one of those where, we try to be rational, but that's one of those where if I start a guy in Toronto and he just gets knocked around, I'm going to feel really dumb, because I know my sort of internal radar was going off on that and saying, hey, that might be dangerous.
Yeah, if you start someone who's wildly inconsistent like Jimenez at Toronto, I could see you definitely feeling that way. But, that's last week of the year. It might just depend on individual owners if you need strikeouts or not, especially if he does get two starts in that week. I think also it'll depend on Josh Donaldson, because that really seems to be the thing that has changed for Toronto. He hasn't hit at all in September, and now he's injured. If he's back and raking in by the time they get to Jimenez, then I would definitely fear them a lot more. That has created a huge hole in that lineup and made them a very different lineup.
Now, one starter I do like a lot right now, and a guy I think we both said, I know I thought it, I hope we said it so that it's on the record, a guy I liked a lot going to Pittsburgh. Ivan Nova is just kind of the textbook Pirates guy. He because so much of what they do is built around making the defense fit with the pitcher, and he's such an extreme ground ball guy. That has been an outstanding fit. Now, again, he's just never going to be a really high strikeout guy. He's not a strikeout per inning kind of guy, but in front of that defense, if he pounds the strike zone and keeps the ball down, he can do some of the things he's doing, keep that ERA down, and keep that base runner ratio down. He's walked three guys in 52 innings. I like Nova a lot, and I'm going to be really intrigued about buying him next year. Am I overly optimistic, or are you with me on Nova?
No, if Nova is a member of the Pirates next season,
yeah, that's true. Good point.
Then I would be really excited. Now, Jay Happ's had a really nice year after kind of maybe getting helped a little bit with the Pirates and then carrying some of that stuff, maybe carrying some of what he learned to Toronto. But, yeah, you see the huge change to me is the walks. In his last, you know, about dozen starts with the Yankees, most of the starts have two or three walks. And since he's been a member of the Pirates, there haven't been any two-walk starts and a lot of zero-walk starts. So, yeah, there's definitely a change in approach there where he's using his defense more, not giving in and walking batters. Giving in sometimes and letting them hit and not letting them have a free pass. So, and to me, that's the huge change. I'd love him if he's back in Pittsburgh. But I think I've seen enough that if he left Pittsburgh, especially if he went to a reasonably favorable environment, that I would still be interested and hope maybe he's carried some of these lessons forward.
He's definitely a guy where I would look very much at what the infield defense behind him is. So I do think that's an enormous part of it. If he's behind, because I suspect, and I don't know this, but I suspect that it's not merely a matter of those guys being in position and turning balls into outs, but you know the other thing that comes into play there is to pitch that way, you've got to believe that when that ball is hit, it's going to turn into an out. And so I suspect I would be worried about some backsliding from him if he went to a team that didn't have, even if he wanted to maintain the same approach, if he goes to a team where he starts seeing those balls not turn into outs, he starts seeing those balls scoot through, you got to think that then you run the risk of him starting to nibble again.
Yeah, I could totally see that. He has also, he's been much better with Pittsburgh, not surprisingly, at keeping the ball in the yard than he was with the Yankees, which I think also helps a pitcher to just feel that they can be more aggressive there. I mean, when he had a lot of starts with the Yankees, especially in the summer, where he was giving up two home runs, and I think it's hard then to not walk batters because you feel like you need to nibble. He's been a little lucky with his home run rate with the Pirates, and that's factored in, but him also getting to a park, I think that favors him is going to be important.
We move on to relief pitchers. Andrew Miller has not had a save in September only has five innings pitched in September, which, you know, you sort of space it out over a full season. You're talking about 60 innings, five strikeouts. He hasn't walked anybody. He's been fine. He certainly hasn't struggled. He's been pretty good, but he has not been... For performance, he has not been the guy that he was even earlier in the year. You look at the previous month in Cleveland, and he had 24 strikeouts in a month. This month he has five and half a month. If we don't think he's going to get any saves, and he's looking at least a little bit mortal on the mound, I think you're still holding him in AL-only leagues. But in some of your shallower leagues, are you willing to drop Andrew Miller to make an upgrade somewhere else?
Yeah, I totally would. I mean, I would drop Miller for a two-start pitcher, you know, and just start going two-start pitcher to two-start pitcher in the last couple of weeks of the season because I'm just not really seeing how... The only way I guess someone would keep him is if they don't really need saves and they don't really need wins. And I know he's had a couple hiccups, but overall, I mean, he's a pretty good candidate to have a low ERA and whip in the last couple of weeks. So you could hold him for that reason. But overall, I think in most leagues, you know, a lot of owners are going to be chasing either wins or saves, and I could see him getting zero of both for the rest of the season and throwing, you know, a half a dozen good innings, and that's just not going to make a big impact. I think one of the reasons you love him at the start of the year is he's going to have good ratios, and there's the chance that he comes into many saves, and that chance is probably gone now. It's too late in the season.
In what should be a shock to absolutely no one, Fernando Rodney pitched his way out of the ninth inning in Miami. He has allowed a fairly remarkable 9 earned runs and gotten 8 outs in 5 games in September. He's been fairly flammable, and connected to that, AJ Ramos is pitching well again. He has 4 saves in the last 6 days. This looks like a done deal. Do you see any intrigue in this Miami bullpen? I think at this point, Ramos has been picked up across the board, and I don't see any reason to hold on to Rodney. Do you see anything more interesting there? Is Barraclough of interest, or is this just a pretty straightforward situation in Miami right now?
Yeah, for me, it's straightforward. I think Ramos should have been back in the ninth inning probably as soon as he came, or as soon as he came off the DL, or like 1 or 2 appearances, and then back into the role. It's funny that I think exactly 2 weeks from today, you and I discussed which reliever would get more saves, and we said, hey, all Rodney has to do is hold that closer's role for even 2 weeks, and he'll end up with more saves than Ramos, and he couldn't even do that. So, you know, I mean, Rodney's not getting the job back, and I don't think anyone else. I think it's Ramos or bust for them for the rest of the season.
Yep. That is pretty clearly going to go down as one of the weirder trades of 2016. And I know the Marlins' rationale, but, boy, they already had a good bullpen, and they went out and got a guy that you had to see this coming. I mean, that was the whole thing. And that's kind of what the thing with Rodney all along is even when he's going well, I know I can never shake the idea that the next blow-up is right around the corner.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right about their bullpen. And when Phelps was in their bullpen, they had a really nice back end. Ramos, Phelps, Barraclough, and, you know, had they maybe not traded for Rodney and picked up another starter instead, they could have left Phelps where he was. And who knows, maybe that would have helped them because, if Rodney isn't blowing these saves and if Phelps is helping them in the late innings, like maybe they're 3 wins ahead of where they are right now and still a little closer.
In just a moment, we are going to get to pitchers who have 2 games they will start. But before we get to that, we're going to have a game that will have 2 starting pitchers. It appears the Mets are at least making noises about that they will piggyback Jacob deGrom and Steven Matz. As a fantasy owner, what in the world do you do with that if you have either of those guys?
I would say I wouldn't use either of them in that game, and then, you know, you just kind of evaluate from there and see if you're comfortable using either of them next week. I don't think that either DeGrom or Matz have to be in a weekly lineup next week. I think it's an option if they pitch well in their piggyback game, but other than that, I don't think that they have to. I know that they're both good pitchers, but we need to see some length out of them before you're putting them in your lineup in a weekly transaction league, don't we?
I think that's absolutely fair. The one thing that I would note is that their starts next week, assuming they do pitch, will be almost certainly at home against the Phillies, which increases my level of interest at least a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I think if we could see 4 innings out of one of them, then that I feel like that guy, then you could reasonably assume he'll throw 5 or 6 against the Phillies. The problem will be is if one of them throws, you know, 2 2/3 or something, you know, this first time out, you need to get that win against the Phillies, you need 5 innings. So I would not be sure that the pitcher is going to get stretched out that far.
Which, let's say somehow in some way they both get 4 innings, and let's say they both pitch reasonably well, and they both are going to start next week. Which one do you like more, just based on what we know right now?
Oh, I'd say I'm so up in the air, I might just like the one that pitches better in their combined game. I guess I like DeGrom more, but if he gave up 3 runs in 4 innings and then Matz threw 4 shutout innings, I would flip right back to Matz because we're in such a short time frame.
The reason I ask is that I actually think I see it differently, and over any longer stretch than like the next 2 weeks, I would pretty clearly, strongly prefer DeGrom. But to me, the difference between these 2 guys is that Matz was pitching well, and in fact, he had a string of really good starts in a row before he went down. 5 starts, 34 Ks, 2.87 ERA. DeGrom was really scuffling. DeGrom had 3 straight starts where he didn't look like himself. And my worry is that, you know, he can get it together and feel good and feel strong for 3 or 4 innings, but the kind of stuff we've been talking about, this kind of fatiguey stuff, doesn't quite feel right stuff,
And I don't say that dismissively. I want to be very clear. I am sure there. I don't doubt there's something amiss, but I think it's much easier to say this feels good, go out and not quite be right and get knocked around. So I do worry a little bit about what we're going to see from DeGrom even when he comes back, whereas I think if Matz is cleared, he's going to be the Matz that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, so I guess you're kind of going into that combined start, I guess, wanting to see Matz pitch and pitch to a decent pitch count, but you need to see DeGrom pitch well.
Yeah, I think that's
Matz
a really good way to put
hiccups,
it.
You may still use him against the Phillies.
Yeah. I think that's
whereas
exactly.
If DeGrom goes 4 innings, 3 runs, you may say, you know, even against the Phillies, he's just not. It's like Garrett Cole, really. Like Garrett Cole's, like, he was DeGrom like at the beginning. They're both, you know, top 15 starters at the beginning of the season, but Garrett Cole just struggled against the Phillies, and it's because he wasn't right.
Yep. I would be very nervous about DeGrom until I really saw him pitch well. Because, again, and I want to be clear, I say this sort of with the point being that this stuff is real, not that anybody is imagining something. That's not the point at all. But, like, I think you see a lot where pitchers aren't right and don't hurt abnormally, and they think they're fine, and they just can't quite get to that point, get that snap, get that extension. And I think you can do that and not even know it and be amiss. And I think that's a worry I sometimes have with pitchers. I feel fine. Well, I know you feel fine, but that doesn't mean you're right. And that's my worry with DeGrom is this rest will leave him saying, I feel fine, but he won't quite be right. I hope he is, but that's the kind of thing that I think about with the kind of condition he's been talking about and that they've been dealing with.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the Mets are in the race, and the Pirates, and even with Garrett Cole, the Pirates were hanging around in the race, and you know, that could push someone like DeGrom even to not quite know that he's not quite fine, but to say, hey, I'm the ace on a team that's right in the thick of the race. I need to take the ball here. And there's nothing like, you know, I don't have a blown out shoulder or something. I need to take the ball here and I need to pitch through this. I mean, we just saw, you and I were just talking before we came on about Marco Estrada, who's apparently been pitching with a herniated disc. He's kind of taking one for the team here, and we didn't know about it, but you know, he's been pitching at not 100% because he's pitching on a team that I'm sure he feels committed to. If the Blue Jays were 10 games out of the postseason, he probably has shut it down by now. If the Mets were 10 games out of the postseason, maybe DeGrom isn't pitching on Sunday. We don't know. We never really know. Is DeGrom know that he's 100%, feel he's 100%, or is he doing what he needs to do to be a valuable part of his team right now to take the ball and see what he can do?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of – those are the questions we have to ask and don't know the answers to. We move on to two start pitchers, and I am less excited about this list than any in a long time. Dan Straley at the Cubs and at the Brewers. Tyler Anderson home for the Cardinals and at the Dodgers. Tyler Skaggs at Texas and at Houston. Jared Kosart home for Arizona and San Francisco. Taijuan Walker home for Toronto at Minnesota. A.J. Griffin home for the Angels at the A's. And A.J. Cole at Miami and at Pittsburgh. Feet to the fire, I probably like Kosart, Walker, and maybe Cole, but I'm not sure there's a guy in there that makes me say, oh, yeah, I need to get on that. Is there somebody that I'm not seeing that you think is a good play there?
Cool. You're right. It's interesting, listen, that Straley's been pitching well, but at the Cubs and at the Brewers is rough. I think I would probably use Straley anyways and just hope that the at the Cubs doesn't go that poorly, because the at the Brewers could go really well. They strike out a lot, and they have a lot of their best hitters are better against lefties. So, you know, he could do well in that start. So I feel like I would use him. Kosart, I just don't believe in him. I know the matchups, like two home starts, and, you know, the Giants offense is good, and the Diamondbacks are way better against lefties. So it makes sense, but I don't trust him at all. I don't trust Skaggs right now because we don't even know how he is health-wise. I think Taijuan Walker is probably my next favorite one, just because he gets the Blue Jays at home and they've been scuffling, like, unless they turn it around this weekend. And then the trip to play the Twins is a pretty favorable one. And A.J. Cole, I'm with you. I'm, like, on the fence with him. He's been posting some really nice strikeout totals, but he has been giving up runs. So it kind of just depends what you need. I could see 10 or 12 strikeouts from him next week, but I could also see 11 innings and 7 runs.
Right. Yep.
Or 8 runs even, yeah.
All right, well, that's Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to listen, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.